Hello and welcome to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. Thank you for joining me today. It is 10 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesday, September 23rd, 2025. Hard to believe, but we're in the last week of September. Amazing. I mean, that flew by so quickly, but we're in autumn. It seemed like, you know, a week ago it was January. So it's been quite a whirlwind of a year. But September's almost over, and October, here we come, right? Here we come. I've been seeing, honestly, for probably 2 weeks in my neighborhood, when Gracie and I go for our walk, houses decorated for Halloween. And that, to me, is just delightful. I just love seeing that. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised. Usually there's a lot more decorated for Halloween. But I think we've had some people move out of the neighborhood and move back into the neighborhood, and maybe they're just not as enthusiastic about Halloween as some of us are. But you know, I love September because it ushers in autumn, which was official yesterday. But October is my favorite month in autumn because it's when autumn is really in all its glory. It's kind of like, you know, April showers bring May flowers, you know, that old saying. That's really true. April is springtime, but you don't really see a lot going on. But it just builds that anticipation, you know, for seeing life come back in all its glory. But May is the month for flowers and spring and springtime, like what you think of as springtime, at least here in Colorado. And that's kind of the same way with September and October. So trees really are starting to change. I can see that. And getting ready to, you know, stop watering our lawns, let everything go into its hibernation period. But it's just lovely. It's just honestly my favorite time. My second favorite, my first favorite month is May, second is October, because I do love Halloween. I think Halloween is the best thing ever. But I'll talk about that probably a lot more as we get closer, because it really is just my favorite holiday. But anyway, welcome to October almost, and thank you for joining me today. The show is live today on 12radio.com and streaming on YouTube. If you'd like to join the chat, go to 12radio.com and click chat. And if you want to join the YouTube chat, just click the link posted under my banner at 12radio.com. You can also subscribe to my channel. I do not do readings on the show, but if you would like a reading or healing from me, you can find me every day on 12listen.com. I'm usually available mid to later morning, Pacific time, into the evening. If you don't see me, or if I happen to be busy on another call, just schedule a call, put in a callback request. I'm notified immediately, and I will get back to you as soon as I possibly can, and I will always do my best to meet your schedule. I have my new Autumn Abundance 15-minute time-based session available through the season. It'll be available through autumn. You know, autumn is the time of harvest. That's what it is. And, you know, it's like, in the material, in the physical, the earth has yielded her bounty. You know, everything that's been cared for and nurtured through spring and summer, planted in spring, nurtured in summer, fed in summer. Now it's time to be harvested to feed us. And, you know, we can use this energy, just the energy of harvest, to expand our ability to receive. You know, no good thing is withheld from us because all good is within us. We're only limited by our beliefs. But there's the kicker. You know, what do we believe about receiving? What do we believe about receiving? If it's hard to receive, if it's, you know, if it's that old, well, you know, I got to give something in order to receive. That's a different concept spiritually, but just thinking, you know, worthiness. Do I feel like I'm worthy to receive? Anyway, what it breaks down to is not only are we limited by our beliefs, but our beliefs are limited, and they create our limitations. So in this 15-minute time-based session, we'll we'll use the time to clear the way of those limiting beliefs. We get rid of them. They are not truth. They have no law. They have no legs. They have no power. They're just hanging out and probably have been hanging out since we were kids. So, or prior, you know, so we can move them. We can move them and make space to receive. So, you know, expansion is the name of the game right now. That's what we're going to see, this beautiful season of change and movement and motion. So, you know, let's clear the way for it. It'd be my honor to work with you and do that. We also have my weekly reminder. We have reduced rates on calls and chats a few times a week on One to Listen, typically Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. We also celebrate astrological events, holidays, and the 12th of each month. If you want to be notified of our specials, go to onetolisten.com and sign up for One to Promotions and also sign up for the Power Peak. Mark Hessen's weekly newsletter. I contribute an article every week, and C.A. Brooks writes the week ahead section. And Mo Abdelbaki and Ginger, we all contribute articles every week to that. And it's not, you know, blowing my own horn. It's a good newsletter. It is. I just happen to be honored to participate in it. I didn't want that to sound weird. But thank you again for listening. However, and whenever you do, there's programming 24/7 on 1-2 Radio, and there are archives of all of the shows from all of the hosts in the on-demand section at 1-2radio.com. You can download them for free anytime you want and take advantage. You know, 1-2 Radio is a great source of inspiration, information, and support. So, you know, there it is. Use it. I want to say thanks to Serena for producing my show today and all she does for us on 1-2 Radio. And we're going to move into the teaching segment because I don't know if you can tell, but I'm really excited about what I want to talk about today. So let's move into the teaching segment by listening to a song called The Secret Rose by David and Steve Gordon from the Celtic Lounge 2 CD and Sequoia Records. Enjoy it, and I'll be back right after. You're listening to Empowerment. I'm Kelly Whetstone. I'm really happy that you're here. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that music. I chose it because I thought it was beautiful and peaceful. And right now it's raining outside. We're having a really wonderful rainy day, like a rainy day. Not just a little bit of rain for a little bit and then moves out. Started last night and it's still going, but it's just that beautiful, peaceful, cleansing kind of pace. It's absolutely lovely. So I think that's probably just adding to the joy of doing this show right now. So today, among other things, I want to talk about, or maybe woven in to the whole show to make our circle, is our methods of operation. And what I mean by that is it's, you know, things that we've always done the way we've always done them without thinking about it. You know, without thinking about it, it's just the way it goes. You know, it's just the way you do it. It's our rules. It's what our standards. But really looking at what's behind them. You know, why is that our rule? Why is that our standard? You know, is it consciousness or is it just autopilot? I mean, really. When we do things the same way all the time, because there's not, well, I can't say this categorically, but there's not a lot of consciousness to it. There's not a lot of being in it. You're just doing it because you know what to do. You know how to do it. I think the majority of the time it is autopilot. And I think it's the path of least resistance because it's what we know. And we don't have to leave our comfort zone. We don't have to try something new. The problem with that is life's constantly changing, constantly in every moment, offering us something different, just offering something different, whatever it is. Sometimes chaos, sometimes peace, sometimes something in the middle, you know, but it's just life. And if we are stuck in our method of operation, then we miss out on the beauty and the chaos of life. We miss out on the joy and the pain. And the joy and the pain are just two sides of the same coin. It's life. That's what it is. And when I said a minute ago, you know, do we stick to our MO because it's the path of least resistance? The path of least resistance is also acceptance. But when it comes to I'll just do it this way because it's easy, that is also a path of least resistance. But it's not a growthful path, right? Acceptance is growthful. Autopilot isn't, really. How could it be? Because it's a redoing of the same thing. Anyway, that's interesting. So, Alan Watts wrote, and this is going to be our foundation for the whole rest of the lesson. The mystic accepts the whole of his experience. He accepts himself as he is, circumstances as they are, and the relationship between them as it is. He excludes no part of his experience. As I said, that's our foundation for this whole lesson. That's our repeating pattern through this lesson. So, breaking that down, accepting circumstances or life as they are. Accepting himself or yourself, your feelings, as you are and as they are. And accepting the relationship between them, between yourself and your circumstances, as it is. That last part, I mean, I found that just powerful and mind-blowing the first time I read it or heard it, and I've gone back to it over and over. But the last sentence, you know, accepting the relationship between them as it is, took a bit to hit, you know, took a bit to really gel. And I finally, it finally hit me like a ton of brick, right? And that's the pot of gold, because it is the consciousness of relativity. In other words, the consciousness knowing that how we react to something becomes our experience of it, how we perceive it. So here's an example. You go to work on your computer and it won't start. That's the circumstance. You need your computer, so you try everything you know to do and it still doesn't turn on. And you start getting a little worried. And then all kinds of crazy thoughts and feelings come in, like, I'm going to miss a deadline or a meeting, or I've got so much on my plate, or I'm going to have to buy a new computer, and then I'm going to have somebody transfer all the data, and then I'm going to have to get used to my new computer, and I don't have time for any of this. And that is where you are in this circumstance, in this example. Now, the relationship between the circumstance and where you are your feelings that have taken you completely out of the present moment and into fear and worry, which are self-perpetuating because you are focused on them, and they are getting in the way of simply doing what you have to do to solve your computer problem. The mystic accepts the whole of his experience. He doesn't push anything away. The whole thing happened. That's the bottom line. This is what happened. This is what is in this example, right? That whole thing happened. Your computer doesn't work. You freaked out. But realizing that freaking out is not going to solve the problem gets you back on the path to a solution. He excludes no part of his experience, and he judges no part of his experience. So to be able to accept a situation like that, and I like to give that example because that's happened to me. Every single bit of it has happened to me. But if you accept it without judgment of the circumstance, the computer wasn't doing anything to you. Your feelings about it, you freaked out. You freaked out. And then the snap out of it moment of realizing that you just have to take care of it. Bottom line, you just have to take care of it. That really is the path to freedom. It truly is. And that's life. Life's a crapshoot. Life shows up as it will. As it will. You know, you have no control over it, but we spend so much time reacting to it rather than just being in it that we struggle. And, you know, whatever you push against, if you push against the circumstance or what's happening in the present moment, you're just going to get pushed back against. That's life. That's relativity. You know, whatever you push against is going to push back. Whatever you struggle with is going to show you why you're struggling. Whatever you think is horrible is going to prove itself over and over and over. And that's just based on your judgment, your belief of what's good, bad, right, or wrong. But in this case, you know, as I said, the mystic excludes no part of his experience because it was just life happening, not good or bad. Just life. And that is consciousness. That is being conscious in life, in your present moment. This is powerful. It is powerful and it is freeing. Because really, how much time do we spend judging or rationalizing everything that comes up rather than just being in it and moving through it? We are our own stumbling blocks, our beliefs, our expectations, our, you know, clinging to wanting things to be the way we want them to be, clinging through that to that. That's why we suffer, you know? What is. Wishing it were different only affects you, you know, and not in a good way. So, continuing with methods of operation, I want to talk about moving from will or doing what you think you have to do to desire. And I touched on this briefly last week when CA was my guest, but there was so much that just kind of expanded further after the show and as the week went on and as I just continued to kind of metabolize and work and realize more about that, you know, moving from will or doing what you think you have to do to desire, which is just allowing yourself to do what you want to do, or at least allowing yourself to be okay with what has to be done, right? I want to clarify something, though. This is not, I am not talking about, I have to go to work today, but I want to stay in bed all day. That is not what I'm talking about. Not at all. I'm talking about the rules, standards, and expectations we hold for ourselves. And they come, as does everything in human consciousness, from our influences and filters. And our influences are prenatal influences, early childhood, environment, education, and life experience. Those are our influences. They create the filters that we see everything through, that are the cause, so to speak, of our perceptions. And also, our influences and filters are what build our ego. Because our ego is just basically that, you know, what we believe about everything. And beliefs are not truth. They're not true. They're just how we've managed to build our world and our concepts and our perceptions. Our beliefs and judgments about what is right or wrong, good or bad, push us to do things a certain way. And when we don't, we usually have some emotional kickback and self-judgment as a result. Ooh. What we don't realize, again, is that beliefs and judgments are not truth. We have set them in place from the time we were little, from the time we were babies and began to realize that, you know, that we were separate from everything in our environment. When we're born, we don't know that. We don't know our separateness. That's a realization that we begin to acquire when we're tiny. But, and then all these things, you know, we're born into a family who has their rules and their beliefs and their judgments, and that's what we are given. You know, those are the things that make up the human race mind, as the old truth teachers used to call it, the thought atmosphere, the psychic sea, or universal consciousness, which is what Joel Goldsmith called it. In other words, it's the atmosphere that we navigate through because we are in an incarnation. And it is comprised of the thoughts and the beliefs and the emotions of every person who has ever been here on this earth. From tremendously good to the tremendous opposite. And that's just it. I mean, that's what we navigate through. But the truth of our being is God. Is God. And so when we know that, we realize, well, that, you know, whatever you heard from so-and-so, you know, is probably an opinion that came through their filters and then came to you through your perception. Really funny to think of it that way, isn't it? But we put all of those in place to keep us on track and to keep us safe. And that's what ego does. Ego's job is to keep us safe and separate and to control. Ego is a construct. It's a construct made up of, you know, all of those beliefs, all those things that we've taken on, and our self-concept, you know, what we believe about ourselves, what we accept, what we what we agree to and accept as our concept of ourselves. That's Neville's definition. But that's it. They were all built. That was all built by beliefs and feedback from other people. Well, when we live exclusively according to our quote-unquote rules and standards, we exclude a whole lot of spontaneous, beautiful life. the life that is happening in the moment. As I said, I touched on this last week with CA when we were talking about painting watercolors. I was saying that I had not painted in a few years because those years, the previous 3 years about, were very demanding and I didn't have the space in my consciousness to even think about it. But this year is different. I have breathing room. And it's been a very long time since I've honestly had breathing room that lasted, let's put it that way. And so I'd been wanting to start a painting, but I could not find a subject that inspired me. And that was strange. That was very, very strange. I have a folder of references where I put images from catalogs, calendars, and whenever I see something that, you know, catches my fancy, that looks like I could, you know, could I paint that? Maybe so. Put it in the folder. And I had gone through that folder more than once. And honestly, everything just felt flat. Nothing lit me up. And again, that was so strange and so abnormal, you know, it was disappointing. And I could just feel it. You know, I could feel it in my body. Just like, oh, you know, what happened? Have I lost it? You know, have I lost my enthusiasm? What happened? So the way I choose a subject that I want to paint is number one, I can see it in my head painted. I can see the final painting in my head. That's my first thumbs up, so to speak. And then I always find something in it. If it's not the whole thing, something in it that challenges me. So it's like, can I paint that water to look like water? You know, can I paint that to look like it's alive? Now, CA was talking last week about a painter who uses three colors of paint and does watercolors and does undersea watercolors, pictures. And it flows through him and it just sounded lovely. And honestly, I've been painting with watercolor. I don't know how to paint with anything else since I was in high school. And I paint structures and landscapes and florals, but I paint them to look as much like the photograph as they possibly can. And that's what I love to do. And that's my style. I would love to be able to just throw paint on a page and have it end up looking like something. I would love to. I've tried. I've really honestly tried. It's not my style. It's just not my style. And that's not a method of operation. That's just how ability for painting flows through me. And again, it's the challenge of making it look as lifelike and as close to the reference as I can, and the joy, the absolute joy of doing it. And so when I couldn't find that, because it's something that just filled me up. You know, I love the challenge. It was like a problem to solve. You know, can I do that? On top of not being able to find it, it came, you know, it shifted on me from I want to do a painting into I need to paint and I can't find a reference. Can you hear the gritted teeth as I said that? That's how I felt. I need to paint. What is wrong? Why can't I find a reference? So added to that, my office is also my art studio. That's why I picked this room to put my office in it, because my easel and my desks and my little desk that holds my paints all fit. And so every time I walk into my office, I see my easel sitting on my art desk, and I see my art case with all my paints in it that I love so much, waiting for me, just waiting for me to use them. Opportunity. Here it is. Opportunity. Use us. Come and play. And then here comes more pressure, right? Along with guilt. The guilt of, I have time to paint and I'm not painting. I want to paint and I'm not painting. I keep running into a wall. What the heck is the deal? So, you know, a thing that gives me so much joy and bliss had taken a very negative turn. Because again, I have the time to paint. And I have to paint. I have to be productive, or I'm no good. And that's the underlying belief. What am I doing? I'm wasting time if I'm not being productive. That is the underlying belief. That, having identified, set me free. I mean, it really did. That's it. After I really understood that and realized what I was doing to myself, it just changed. It just changed. I woke up one morning just feeling softer about the whole thing. Not pressured. Because again, when I was struggling to find a subject, struggling to, you know, feeling that need to paint just expand in my head and in my physical body, it was hard. You know, it has a hard edge. When you're struggling, you have a hard edge. You don't struggle softly. I don't think anybody struggles softly. I don't know how you would do that. But it just had that hard, pushy edge. But then I woke up, as I said, one morning, and I just felt softer about the whole thing. Like I'd released it. And one of the images from my folder that I honestly have had in it for years floated into my head very gently, just floated in, like, how about this? And when I went back and grabbed it out of my folder, I saw it. It's like I saw it with different eyes. And I got my inspiration. And so the next thing I had to overcome was the fear and resistance that had me questioning whether or not I could pull it off, whether or not I could do that, because it's been a few years. I mean, I've worked on paintings, I've done paintings, I've gone back to paintings, a painting, and finished it, and it came out great. But to start from scratch, to start from drawing through painting and finishing, it's been a while. So, you know, I was really questioning whether or not I could do it. Because again, I kept thinking, you know, use it or lose it. Use it or lose it. Whatever talent you have, if you don't use it, it's going to dissipate. So all those things were in my head. But I sat down and I drew it. I sketched it in a very short period of time. And I felt so much gratitude for having done that. Because I was in my bliss. It was like a little tough at the beginning, but I mean, you know, when you start something, like when you start to ride a bike and you have to start and get your balance, so to speak, and then you just go. That's exactly what this was. That's a great metaphor for how it worked for me. And the thing is that it's a cool sketch. It was practice, and it was intended to be practice, but it was wonderful because I found myself back in the place of just being the instrument that followed along with the drawing as it showed up on the paper. And it was so cool because I got back to the love and the desire to paint and the love of just the act of painting without all the negative baggage. Now, a couple days ago, I went through and drew it again, and this time for the purpose of painting, and it's ready to go. So I can't wait to start. I'll start on it this week. But my paintings, again, because I try to make them really realistic, I go back and it's like a, a process. You know, I'd love to just slap something up and have it look gorgeous, but that's not me. You know, and maybe that goes back to, you know, obviously my method of operation, but that's kind of one that I don't think I would, I don't want to change because I love that. I love getting it to the place. Okay, it's not quite there. Okay, do this, you know, add a little bit more, take a little bit more, lighten that up, darken that up, whatever it is. And it's just, it's a thrill, you know, I really am in my bliss. I'm in my joy and loving every minute of it. So, but back to, you know, just the realization of getting back to wanting to do to the desire and away from the have to was a huge realization for me, not just in this instant, but in the way I do pretty much everything. As I mentioned last week, I'm in my element when I have a project to do or a problem to solve. And I'm not so comfortable when I don't, because as my friend told me, I equate doing with growing. So when I found myself with breathing room, I would find something productive to fill it with. Oh, hey, I got space. What can I do? Rather than just enjoy the space, right? Rather than being in it, enjoying the opportunity to just float maybe for a minute, to just float and do what I want. That was my method of operation my whole adult life. Meeting demands, taking care of business. And that was easy. Not adhering to the rules and standards I created and held for myself brought me face to face with my inner critic. And she is a relentlessly brutal slinger of guilt, shame, regret, remorse, you name it. She's nasty. So, you know, delayed gratification also. So I stuck to the rules. I stuck to, you know, my method of operation. And delayed gratification played a big part. I couldn't just have something fun or downtime. And I'm not talking every minute of every day, but just, but as a big part of my life, you know, I couldn't just have downtime. I had to earn it by getting everything that had to be done, done before. That's delayed gratification. Now, there is something to be said for not having anything hanging over my head that could put a damper on my free time, but I took it to extremes. I took it to extremes. Having it pointed out to me was an absolute gift from God. In fact, my friend that said, you know, that I equate doing with growing, long, long time ago, I mean, when Jared was still home many years ago, my friend said to me, you know, I was saying that, this is when I worked in an office in the mortgage business. So I worked, you know, 5 days a week and then the weekends. On Saturday, I would clean the house and on Sunday, I would paint. And we were just talking about that. And my friend said to me, so what if you're cleaning house and your mom came over and you decided to have a cup of tea? Could you just let yourself stop your rules and have a cup of tea? And, you know, I think my response was, oh, she wouldn't do that because she knows I clean on Saturday. Not at all answering the question. But probably at that time, I would have a really hard time stopping right in the middle and having a cup of tea. So, you know, it's just interesting. But, you know, as I said, having that pointed out to me and remembering that just a minute ago is really funny. It just makes me conscious of being in the present moment, in the moment, rather than running on autopilot. Running on, you know, oh, I'd like, oh, that looks nice. Oh, I got to go do this. You know, how we do, I'm including a lot of us in here because I know I'm not teaching myself here or speaking to myself here. It, we do that. It's like, oh, look at that. Oh, I got to go. You know, and that's running on autopilot. That's not being in the present moment. But when the conflict starts to arise, because I'm overruling, when I decide to be in the moment, when I decide to just take a break, you know, from the way I do things, the conflict starts to arise because I'm overruling my ego, who is absolutely no fun at all. But when I do that, I can just settle into the moment. And I had this crazy image of that come up in my mind when I thought about that. You know, imagine the present moment, just this image. It's a clear screen and it's right in front of your face. Say it's like, I don't know, 6x6, a clear screen. This is the present moment. It's full of life. It's full of just peace, beingness, permission. And all around it is chaos. All around it is, you know, my ego going, what do you think you're doing? You need to do this. You need, oh no, this is waiting. Oh no, no. You know, and it's a crazy image, but it made a lot of sense. You know, and when I can just stick with that image, that clear screen, and settle into it, you know, no judgment about it, no judgment about being in it, no judgment about not being, you know, not doing what is talking to me outside of me, but just experiencing it, accepting it, and accepting my feelings about it. And then just following my feelings, you know, doing what feels best. So now I want to talk in the same vein about the body. And about our methods of operation, or have to versus want to, where our bodies are concerned. I think we encounter a lot of repeating patterns in relation to our bodies. You know, body is an area where we judge ourselves harshly and at times really feel helpless and out of control. You know, for instance, maybe you've tried a million diets, but none of them work. Or maybe you want to change a habit, but it failed over and over. The only place to change these experiences is to change your concept of yourself, which is what you accept and agree to as yourself. Acceptance, as I've just shared, you know, the circumstance, where you are in it, and the relationship of the two together, is a brilliant way to do that. Is a really brilliant way to do that. Your body is the temple of the living God. Your body is spiritual. Your health is spiritual. But your mind, your human mind, informed by your influences and filters, creates the form that you see. You see the body that you believe. Everything is spiritual. Everything in our experience is spiritual. What we see materially is the forms that our mind has given them. And our mind is completely influenced by our filters, our influences, our past experience. So the mind is what creates form. So the body that you see it in the way you see it because it's what you believe about it. Now, every change takes place within. There is no consciousness is cause. Consciousness is cause. What we see is the effect of consciousness, hardened into fact, as Neville would say. We are our harshest judges, our harshest critics, which keeps us focused on what we do not want and expands it in our experience. That's what occurs as relationship between the circumstance, body, and your feelings about it. Stuart Wilde said, wait a minute, I want to go back a minute. You know, when we're focused on, focus is life, right? Attention is life. Attention is love, good, bad, or indifferent. When we are focused on something and giving it our attention, we are loving it with our energy, and we are expanding it, good, bad, or indifferent. And when we want to change something by wanting to change it, by not accepting it, we are pushing against it. And again, whatever we push against is going to push back and show us what we believe. So now I had to throw that in there. Stuart Wilde talked about, this was a talk that he gave in Australia, and I remember it. And it was a question and answer time. And this woman said, I want my husband to stop smoking. And Stuart said, the minute it becomes more, he said, you can't do that. You're infringing. If you're trying to force him to stop smoking, you're infringing. He's in his evolution. He's doing him. Leave him alone. You're suffering because you want him to be different. He didn't say that, but she was. He said, a person will quit smoking the moment it becomes more important to be a non-smoker than a smoker, and not a minute before. When we're trying to break a habit or lose weight, again, we're focused on the habit we want to break or the weight we want to lose, and that focus expands what we don't want. We are affirming our belief that the weight or the habit is wrong, that it's bad, that it shouldn't be. And therefore, it keeps proving that to us. If we become indifferent to it through acceptance, things will change. We can get there by taking an honest look at our self-concept, at our influences from childhood and throughout life, and what people may have told us about ourselves or our bodies or what we've seen on TV, or, you know, all of those things that are in our experience that make impressions, right? But things that people have told us, things that we believe, they stuck. And they stuck because we believed them. And remember, Urban Seal just came into my head. You know, no other person's thought about you has anything to do with you unless and until you make it your thought. And so, you know, especially in childhood, these people feed me, they put me to bed, they give us a house, they love me. So whatever they tell me has to be true. You know, I mean, it's just, we're sponges. We're just little people. We're just little blank slates when we get here. But we use those beliefs to form our bodies, like we use them to form our experiences. But none of them are true. None. None. And we can change anything. Joel Goldsmith wrote, "It is sometimes believed that the health of the body and mind is something different from the health of the soul, but it's not. When the soul is at peace, the body responds and shows forth this peace. The soul is our real being, and the action of the soul operates in our body to give health and strength, in our business to give guidance and direction and prosperity, and in our nations to give wisdom, honor, and justice. The soul is the source of all human good. And when we are in contact with the soul center, we do not find body and business and government things separate and apart, but we find that body, business, and government are all acted upon by the soul." And the soul, I'm just interjecting here, there is only one soul. There's only one being, one consciousness, one God who has many names, but only one, that we all share. But he said, when this contact with our inner self is made, and when consciousness is filled with the realization of God's presence, all our earthly affairs respond. And that's from the heart of mysticism. And I'm just going to complete our circle right now with Alan Watts, and back to our basic foundation for this whole this whole lesson. The mystic accepts the whole experience. He accepts himself as he is, circumstances as they are, and the relationship between them as it is. He excludes no part of his experience. The freedom of the spirit, which is known through total acceptance of life and of oneself, is the acceptance of the present moment. Acceptance of the present moment, right now, allows the moment to live, allows life to live as it is now, and allows the moment to set us free. And it's a couple minutes early, but I want to thank you for joining me today, because that's where I have to leave it. Circle's complete. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Kelly Whetstone. You've been listening to Empowerment. We're here on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way that you listen to the world. I hope you have a very, very blessed week. Thanks, everyone. And please stay tuned for Katie Weaver. Bye-bye.